Necessary Things, a Stargate Atlantis fic by Minnow1212, read by Sophia Saul. Kavanaugh, the bastard, wouldn't share his iPod with anyone. Rodney had tried asking first. Honestly, he had. Fine, all right. He hadn't so much asked as assumed that Kavanaugh would upload his music collection to the server for everyone's benefit. But when Kavanaugh had said, snottily for the record, though that probably didn't need to be specified since it was his default tone of voice, even towards a superior, and when Rodney said superior, he wasn't just referring to his role as head of the science department, but to his superior brains, someone Kavanaugh should defer. Rodney, Elizabeth interrupted. She rather looked like she was regretting being early to the daily senior staff meeting and asking casually if Rodney had any problems that he wanted to bring to her attention. The point is, Kavanaugh said he hadn't planned on it, and so I asked politely if he would please, for the good of the science department, contribute to our musical collection, and he won't. Weir didn't look like she understood the extent of the problem, and Rodney leaned forward in his chair for emphasis. He's the only one on the entire base who has Bach, Elizabeth. He's hoarding the Goldberg variations. Surely it would be good for teamwork and morale and... All those kinds of things that Elizabeth would usually be concerned about, and that Rodney usually wasn't. And a healthy work environment, he finished triumphantly. Yes, we'd all be much happier and more productive if we didn't have to listen to Miko's CD of the Four Seasons for the 800th time. I mean, really, spring, summer, autumn, winter, over and over and over again. It's ruining Vivaldi for me, and it's 4 months until the Daedalus goes back to Earth for resupply, and... Rodney... Elizabeth paused and steepled her hands in front of her before she went on, looking as if she was choosing her words carefully. I don't think this is a problem serious enough to require my mediation. Surely you can resolve it yourself? She looked sternly at him. And by that, I don't mean that you should threaten Kavanaugh with the worst assignment you can think of to get him to give up his iPod. Which Rodney had considered, but unfortunately Kavanaugh was making good progress on his current project. Besides, he'd only get more stubborn if pressed. But if the request came from you... I am not going to browbeat him into giving up use of a personal possession, Elizabeth said. He'd get it back, Rodney exclaimed, unharmed. All we'd have to do is copy the files over and he could have it back again. He's just being selfish and petty. I understand, Elizabeth said. I agree, Rodney. It is petty on his part. But there's a principle here. We have so few possessions here, so little privacy. And I won't set the precedent of ordering someone to hand over a belonging because someone else decides they need it more. All the rest of us share, Rodney replied, leaning back in his chair and crossing his arms. And that's to your credit, Elizabeth agreed. But that's a choice, not a requirement. If you want Kavanaugh to cooperate, find a way to convince him and... She sent him a warning glance, not a way that involves abusing your position as a supervisor. Also, let me make myself clear, I will not be happy if Kavanaugh accidentally loses his iPod and only finds it again after the files on it have made their way onto the server. Is that understood? Understood, Rodney said. Kavanaugh kept his iPod too tightly guarded anyway. Bastard. Didn't it just figure that he had good taste in music? But... Rodney... Elizabeth began, sounding tired, and Rodney stopped, feeling a twinge of conscience. His own workload had gotten a little lighter since they'd fought off the Wraith attack, which effectively meant he was only terribly overworked instead of desperately swamped, but Weir had only seemed busier. In addition to the after-effects of the attack itself, a lot of new people had come through the gate with Everett, and on the Daedalus with Caldwell, and that had created a host of new explorations and missions and logistical problems to deal with. Rodney had been insulated from most of it once the major repairs had been completed, since almost all of the new personnel were military, and exhausted and heartsick as he'd been then, happy to be insulated from it, but Elizabeth had been looking frayed around the edges. Sorry, he said, before she could go on. You're right. I'll take care of it. Nothing for you to worry about. Consider the problem solved. All right, then, Elizabeth said, although she didn't look entirely convinced in his abilities to do so. You know, I do seem to remember seeing Sergeant Mathieson and, was it Jenkins, with iPods at some point. Maybe you can ask them. And surely there have to be others as well. Waterlogged and smashed, Rodney said with a sigh. And yes, other people brought iPods, but they broke, or they'd been used for storing other files, or they got lost off-world, or they went through the laundry, or, well, they belonged to people with atrocious taste in music. You'd think it would be statistically improbable for someone to fill an entire iPod with songs I loathe, but Captain Friedman managed it. Ah. Weir looked up as the door to the conference room opened to admit Sergeant Tears. Rebecca, nice to see you again. You too, Dr. Weir. Hi, Dr. McKay, Tears said cheerfully. Rodney smiled weakly and lifted a hand to wave at her. He was in a bad mood, true, but it was hard to sulk at Sergeant Tears. The acting head of security, while Bates slowly recovered, she was 3 inches taller than Rodney and could easily kick his ass, and Rodney had always found that oddly attractive in a woman. Also, she was remarkably upbeat and perky and friendly, much more so than Bates had been. Prettier than Bates, too. And the way she was still so damned enthused about Atlantis after spending 2 months here was nice. Oh, hello, Dr. Beckett, Dr. Zelenka, she added, smiling widely as Carson and Raddick filed in. Of course, she was upbeat and friendly and enthusiastic to everyone, Rodney thought with a touch of wistfulness, which made it difficult to convince himself that she was smiling because she was happy to see him. No go on Kavanaugh, he whispered to Zelenka as the other man sat down next to him, and Roddick sighed. Wonderful. My choice of Vivaldi or Brazilian techno, and if I do not listen to music while I work, then I have to listen to Gorson's muttering, talk, 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 while he works. I'd share my music, except wait, you wiped all my MP3s off my laptop, Rodney said. Zelenka looked exasperated. Yes, I am most terribly sorry. If we had had to flee the Wraith, I am sure we would have been consoled in our exile by the collected works of They Might Be Giants. He held up one hand in the air and said, remnants of ancient database. He held up the other hand as if weighing scales. Particle Man. Such a dilemma it was. Oh, shut up, Rodney said, conceding the point. You lost some files? Tears inquired, and Rodney explained the situation. Of course, it had been necessary to delete extraneous files in the hard drives to make room for as much of the ancient database as they could store. He hadn't objected at the time. Truthfully, he hadn't even noticed until about a month after the attack, absorbed as he'd been in a mixture of numbness and grief and worry and frantic work. But then things had settled down enough that he'd sort of woken up and looked around him and thought it would be nice to listen to some music while he worked, only to discover that the music selection in Atlantis had been reduced greatly. Led Zeppelin, gone. Genesis, gone. Moxie Fruvis, gone. Bare Naked Ladies, well, not gone, but down to one CD from Dr. Yee, and it was their later work. It's such a shame, Tears said. I wish we'd had more time when we were packing to bring you all more music and books and DVDs. This was, in fact, a source of an unceasing irritation. The Daedalus was huge. Someone couldn't have tucked away a few extra iPods in the Return of the King Extended Edition in a corner somewhere. But Tears' eyes were a rich shade of brown and sympathetic and kind, so Rodney bit back the rant and smiled at her and said, "Oh, well, I'm not complaining." He ignored Zelenka's sotto voce. Why break a habit now? "Mainly I'm grateful to have coffee again, plus the part where you saved our lives, obviously. And it's nice to see new faces around the place, like yours, and..." He was babbling, and this wasn't going anyplace good, was it? Fortunately, Colonel Caldwell and Major Shepard came in on that note, conferring about some minor bureaucratic military problem. This was not an uncommon sight these days. Rodney occasionally wondered if someone somewhere had a finite list of all the petty problems that could possibly crop up in Atlantis and was checking items off on it. Taylor followed them in, and Weir brought the meeting to order. Granted, not having a wide selection of music wasn't the biggest problem in the world, or even the biggest problem in Rodney's life. It was possible, he conceded, that he was devoting a disproportionate amount of energy to it. On the other hand, it was a problem with a clearly defined goal, and one without risk of death or dismemberment in achieving that goal, and Rodney appreciated having that sort of problem. Also, giving up now would mean that Kavanaugh would win. So Rodney asked Kavanaugh again, invoking common ground and scientific camaraderie, and then asking in what was, granted, a raised voice, if Kavanaugh wanted to get a reputation for pettiness and obstructiveness. Then he pulled out the big guns and talked Miko into making the request, because Kavanaugh could resist both abrasiveness and logic, but might fall to Miko's tentative politeness. But Kavanaugh stood firm, and it was Rodney who ended up feeling like he'd kicked a puppy when he saw Miko's downcast eyes. "All right," he told Zelenka. "If he won't share it, he might exchange it, so we need someone who's skilled at negotiation. That isn't either of us." Raddick looked as if he would argue the point, then shrugged and pushed his glasses back up. "True, he will refuse you whatever you offer because you tried to badger it out of him, and he will refuse me out of spite because he is jealous." He glared briefly at Rodney. as if I went and asked you, please, Rodney, give me extra administrative duties and make me sit in at endless meetings. I will find that so much more fascinating than my own work. It was a well-deserved promotion, Rodney insisted. You were already acting as deputy head of science anyway, and you deserved the title. Oh, and your glee over cutting your own paperwork had nothing to do with it, Selenka muttered, waving away Rodney's half-hearted protests with one hand. It was Dr. Madrana who handled the trade negotiations on MX5639 that went so well, yes? Dr. Oh, the biologist. Yes, she did, Rodney agreed with satisfaction. I'll ask her. Dr. Madrano tilted her head to one side thoughtfully and said that she wasn't much of a music person herself, but she'd go and see what Kavanaugh would be willing to trade if Rodney would guarantee her, regardless of her success, the first choice of lab space in the new wing the military personnel had just cleared for expansion. Right, of course, Rodney agreed glibly, and Madrano crossed her arms at him until he sighed and went away to talk to Elizabeth about it right then. Obviously, Madrano was a successful negotiator because she took nothing on faith. Elizabeth sent him to Tears, and he and Tears and Madrano took a walk through the new space, Madrano making small comments of assessment and satisfaction while Rodney made small talk with Rebecca about their entertainment options in the Pegasus Galaxy. "Makes you wonder what the ancients did with their spare time," she said at one point, "what their daily lives were like, what kinds of toys or games or music they had." Rodney didn't care much about their daily lives, but he had been curious about their music. "We looked in their database for music at the beginning," he told her, "but it contains very little cultural information. They may have done what we did and wiped out everything else to make more room for the strategic information." "I guess when an enemy's coming, you save the things that are necessary for your survival first," Tears agreed. "Yes," Rodney said, feeling a wave of melancholy pass over him. "We're still hoping to find a portable storage medium at some point, though," he added. "So if you find anything that looks like that while you're exploring, though obviously it might not resemble a CD or tape or anything like that, let us know. Oh, and musical instruments. They have to be around here somewhere." "We'll keep an eye out," Tears said. "Though maybe they didn't have music. Maybe they evolved beyond it." Rodney blinked. "Beyond music?" "Everything we hear about them indicates how advanced they are, doesn't it? It's hard to imagine them singing lullabies to their children or getting down on a dance floor." "True, but... it seems they spent their time on science and technology rather than on something that's just for entertainment." Rodney looked at her again. Long legs, shiny hair, big expressive brown eyes, curves, and yet, beyond music? Just for entertainment? "That's an interesting way to look at it," he managed finally. "Unlikely and frankly somewhat depressing, but interesting." And people claimed he had no tact or diplomacy. He was feeling unaccountably glum when he left Madrano packing up her office with the help of some Marines and headed to the cafeteria for a late dinner. The cafeteria was almost deserted at this hour, but he saw Shepard and Taylor there. They both had the glassy-eyed look of people who had been on their feet all day and were eating dutifully to refuel instead of out of appetite. Rodney set his tray down at their table and answered their greetings and got brief updates on what they'd been doing. Aside from the daily senior staff meetings, he hadn't seen much of either of them lately. Elizabeth had bumped exploring the city and building up his defenses to the top of the priority list, now that they weren't in such urgent need of a ZPM. As a consequence, Rodney had been tied to the labs, and Shepard had been on city exploration duty when he wasn't helping prep and debrief the teams that were going out in the field. Rodney had only been off-world twice since the attack, both times as part of the large group of people who had gone to scavenge useful items from the abandoned planet of M7R567, though he gathered that Taylor had accompanied a few other teams out on trading missions. It was nice to catch up with the two of them, though none of them were talkative tonight, and Rodney ended up picking at his food while they carried on a desultory conversation about fighting techniques that he mostly tuned out. It was true that the ancients didn't come across as fun-loving people who broke out into spontaneous song and dance at the drop of a hat, but if you looked at their architecture, they obviously appreciated beauty. They hadn't been wholly utilitarian. God, the elegant creativity in some of their systems, even if they'd prized efficiency. Plus, given the prevalence of music throughout human history, although, come to think of it, had they heard music on any of their trips through the Stargate? "You people have music, right?" he blurted out, interrupting Taylor. "Lullabies and dances and things like that?" Taylor sent a questioning glance at Shepard, who telegraphed puzzlement back to her with a lift of his eyebrows. "Yes, of course," Taylor said. "I've spoken about some of our traditional music with your anthropologists." Rodney leaned towards her, propping his elbows on the table. "Do your people say anything about the ancestors having music? Does any of your music come from them?" "I do not believe so. There are some chants we sing as prayers, though. Is that what you mean? No, it... Never mind. The ancients probably weren't the type to sing silly nursery rhymes to their kids, were they? They don't come across as warm and cuddly, no, Shepherd said dryly. I kind of figure that if they had music, it was all that kind of stuff that's atonal and dissonant and jangly. No, no, Rodney said impatiently. I mean, yes, possibly some of their music was like that. But you don't get that kind of musical experimentation without having other kinds of music, too. If you've got people specializing in music production and theory, then you also have children's songs and people wandering around humming and amateurs forming singing groups and playing ineptly on secondhand instruments. Rodney frowned. Had any of the ancients ever been inept at anything? They had to have been. They'd just done a brilliant PR job that suggested otherwise. Shepherd said, It's easier to imagine them dressing up for the symphony than strumming a banjo and singing country music, though. Country music? Taylor asked. A type of music we have, Shepherd explained. A lot of it's about, I don't know, faithless wives and trucks breaking down and things going wrong. I don't know what the ancient version would be. My puddle jumper broke down by the side of the road, Rodney said. And my wife ran off to another planet. Shepherd snickered and then half sang, She left through the Stargate 'cause she don't love me no more. Rodney smiled unwillingly. My poor old dog was dying, so I put it into stasis until I could research a cure. No, it doesn't fit their image, does it? He sighed. Not really, Shepherd shrugged, not unsympathetically, and glanced at his watch. He hastily gulped down the rest of his drink before standing and picking up his tray. Meeting with Caldwell, gotta run. Taylor, meet you in an hour for practice session, all right? And hey, speaking of practice, McKay, you got time tomorrow evening for flying? Rodney nodded. I'm free then, yes. He added wistfully, unless we suddenly discovered the ancient equivalent of a CD player. It was still bothering him the next day, even after Zelenka pointed out that surely a race that sought perfection in so many things would seek the perfect combination of sounds. Then why haven't we found evidence of it? Rodney said, aware that he was whining. Instruments, or scores, or recordings. It is possible we have come across instruments and not seen them for what they were, Raddick pointed out. Also, we have been busy with other things. But now we have the chance to really explore the city. He glanced around their lab, tables full with the more interesting or mystifying ancient devices that had been found in the recent round of explorations, with a look of satisfaction. I myself plan to start with that oblong green object. Rodney poked at it with a finger. Yes, any ideas on this? Quite a few, Zelenka said cheerfully, and absolutely no evidence for any of them. Excellent, I'll be working on the cylindrical orange things. Medrano came by an hour later and collapsed dramatically in the chair nearest his workstation. If I'd known he was going to be that much trouble, I'd never have agreed. But he started out with outright refusal, and now he's agreeing to name a price, so I had some success. Unfortunately, he doesn't want a particular kind of food, and he can do his own computer upgrades, and he can work any place which cuts out most of the usual bartering system. She smiled impishly at him. At one point, he said he'd give up the music if you'd apologize publicly over the citywide comm link in detail for every time you'd criticized his work, and promised to do so every time you criticized him in the future. I convinced him to stick to more realistic demands. I should think so, Rodney said. What does he want? He said to come by and he'll talk to you. He says you don't have anything he wants, but he wants something from Major Shepherd, and you'd have better luck persuading the Major than he would. Her voice went wry. What with the Major being the obstructive and small-minded and anti-science military type that he so clearly is. Rodney brushed away the insults to Shepherd with a wave. What could he want from... Majerna stood up and shrugged. Haven't the slightest, just carrying the message, and now I am heading back to my new office. Well, that's odd, Rodney said after she'd left. Perhaps something to do with the ATA gene, Zelenka suggested, looking up from the green device, which had turned out to be a smoke detector with an extremely ear-splitting wail and no discernible power source. If he needs extensive testing of some object? He has the gene himself, though, Rodney pointed out. Not very strong. True. Kavanaugh had been born with the gene, which was one of the reasons he'd been included on the mission, despite his stated aversion to working on teams. However, the ancient technology responded sluggishly and weakly to him. Carson produced stronger, if unpredictable, results, and those who had undergone the gene therapy could generally manipulate the technology at higher levels. It made sense for Kavanaugh to get someone with the ATA gene to help him on a project. Rodney himself preferred to use Shepherd as a test subject for the more complex technology. But Kavanaugh could make a case to Rodney or Elizabeth or Caldwell that he required Shepherd's assistance without offering anything in return. Strange, though. Rodney let it go in favor of more interesting things. The small orange cylinders each sent out force fields that made portable soundproof booths, and he was working out their specifications. I want flying lessons on the jumper, Kavanaugh said, folding his arms and sitting up very straight, as if daring Rodney to make a mocking response. Kavanaugh had for once surprised him, and mockery was the furthest thing from Rodney's mind. He said. Why? Why do you think, Kavanaugh said. In case of emergency, of course. It's not because it's cool or something ridiculous like that. He looked contemptuous and dismissive, and to Rodney's surprise, and though he didn't let it show, that jeer hit home. Though he'd been occupied in the labs recently, Rodney expected to return to active regular field work soon. He'd been making a conscious effort not to let his skills lapse, practicing at the shooting range and going up with Shepard in the jumper once a week or so. He'd made the decision out of a sense of duty to the people with whom he did field work, but the flying lessons with Shepard were also surprisingly fun, something he'd come to look forward to. For a moment, he wondered about public perception in his department, whether people thought that he was shirking his duties to run off and play and try to be one of the cool kids. Which, given the amount of time he put in at the lab and his undisputed accomplishments, was such a ridiculous thought that he dismissed it summarily. "You're not on one of the field teams," Rodney said. "Obviously, threats come to the city, too. If we ever need to flee, I want to be prepared." Rodney considered objections to that. There were plenty of trained pilots now to fly the puddle jumpers, not to mention a few amateurs like Rodney or Carson, who knew the rudimentary bits. Annoying as Kavanaugh was, they were hardly going to leave him behind. But wait, why was he trying to argue Kavanaugh out of this? Then he'd just have to send Medrano back to start at the beginning. "Fine, I'll talk to him." A thought occurred to him. "Have you tried already? If he's already said no..." "Why bother?" Kavanaugh said with a scowl. "It's not like Shepard or Caldwell would bother to listen to a civilian. It's not like any of the people in charge here listen to any ideas except what they want to hear." The unsubstantiated assertions in that little speech made his fingers twitch with the urge to refute them. But it wouldn't do any good, and it wouldn't get him what he wanted. "Right then," Rodney said. "I'll bring it up to him and leave you to enjoy your persecution complex." Rodney didn't get a chance to see Shepard before they met that evening for puddle jumper practice, so he brought the matter up on their way to the mountainous region of the mainland. The mountains made what Shepard called a neat little obstacle course, and Rodney called evidence that you've gone crazy. "Oh my God, fine, I'm heading in that direction." "I have a little bit of a favor to ask," he said as casually as possible. "A small thing." Shepard finished a bite of a sandwich. He detoured by the cafeterias on their way to the jumper bay to snag something to eat, since that day's explorations had run later than expected. "Shoot," Shepard said, and then, "Whoa, you are lying through your teeth." "I am not." Shepard raised an eyebrow, and a display screen popped up. "That'd be more convincing if you hadn't suddenly veered way off course." "Oh." Rodney looked at the screen and corrected his course. "Oops." Shepard eyed him warily. "So, this small favor, which I'm betting is a big one?" "No, honestly, it's not a big thing," Rodney said, and felt compelled to clarify. "Comparatively, I'm not asking you to donate a kidney or anything." "Uh-huh," Shepard said, and took another bite of his sandwich. Glancing over at him and the way he was slouched in his seat, rumpled and tired, Rodney felt another of those bothersome pangs of guilt. He only had a vague idea about Shepard's more mundane responsibilities on the base, but he'd been aware that Shepard, like Weir, had only gotten busier with the arrival of new personnel. Shepard had become more difficult to track down lately, and whenever Rodney did manage to snag him to test an object or sit in the chair, Rodney was always pulling him from some other duty. Sicking Kavanaugh on him was maybe not the kindest thing to do right now. "Spit it out," Shepard said. "You can say no, of course," Rodney offered nobly, and Shepard made a speed-it-up gesture with his hand and popped the last bite of the sandwich in his mouth. "I've told you about the limited amount of music on the base since..." "At length," Shepard mumbled through his mouthful of food. "Kavanaugh brought an iPod as his personal possession, and it has a really good music selection, and he'll share it with us, all of us. This wouldn't just be for me, only he wants something in return." "And I come into this where?" Shepard pulled a cookie out of a stack of them in a Ziploc bag and eyed it quizzically. "Do these look like Thin Mints to you?" "Are they?" Rodney peered at them. "They are! The Daedalus brought Girl Scout cookies and no one told me? Can I..." "Thanks. Oh my God, good. I think these may be imitation Thin Mints. Still good." "Okay. Kavanaugh wants to learn to fly jumper, in case of emergencies." "I take it he has the ATA gene, then?" Not an outright refusal then, though Shepard didn't sound pleased. "Yes, though he's not the best with the technology," Rodney admitted. "Good enough to work the jumper?" Shepard asked. "Good question, actually." "I'm fairly sure, yes," Rodney said. "Yes, as long as he concentrates, he's fine." Off Shepard's skeptical look, he replied, "I found not crashing and dying is a good incentive for concentration." Shepard pulled another cookie out of the baggie and handed it to him before taking the last one. Don't... Watch out for crumbs in the console. He added, voice unenthusiastic but resigned, It probably isn't a bad idea to have everyone who's capable and interested learn the basics. Wait, that is what he wants to learn, right? Basic how to turn things on, how to maneuver, how to cloak, those types of things? Or the sort of evasive maneuvering and high-speed stuff I'm showing you? Basics, Rodney assured him hastily. Kavanaugh had better just have meant the basics. Yeah, fine. A lesson or two should do for that. If he turns out to have an aptitude for it, we'll reevaluate then. Thank you so much! Rodney beamed at him. Bach, Rachmaninoff, Rush! Hours and hours of music that weren't Vivaldi! Thank you, really! Shepard looked a little amused by his enthusiasm. It's not that big a deal. Well, no, if you weren't such an asshole. I've worked with worse, Shepard said, and for a moment his voice was shaded a little darker, though he was still smirking. Hey, do I get anything in return for this favor? Of course, Rodney agreed expansively. What do you want? Huh. Evidently, his easy agreement had taken Shepard off guard. Let me think about that. Rodney thought about it himself. Their food supplies were plentiful again. Books and tapes and DVDs had been bartered at the beginning, but that habit had somehow fallen by the wayside, and now most people lent them out without keeping track. Rodney could promise not to bug Shepard the next time something required the ATA gene, but he wouldn't stick to that promise if anything scientifically interesting came up, so that was out. You're one of those people who are impossible to shop for, aren't you? Rodney said. I am not. I'm not. It's not my fault the Pegasus Galaxy is short on things like football tickets and sporting goods stores, Shepard said. He shifted in his seat and added, sounding discontented for a moment, God, when the Daedalus goes back for resupply, we're going to have to put some footballs and baseballs and surfboards. We definitely need surfboards on the request list. Then he shrugged, seeming to shake off the moment of moodiness, and slanted a curious look at Rodney. What are you putting on? Oh, my list's already 5 pages and counting, Rodney informed him. Strange how he'd managed for a year without thinking of most of the items on his list, but now that he knew that he could have them in 4 months, assuming he didn't get murdered by prospective allies who turned out to be psychotic sadists, or that the Wraith didn't come again, or that he didn't die in a freak lab accident before that time, oh, the myriad possibilities! He'd gotten impatient for them. Though the itchiness of anticipation was its own sort of peculiar pleasure, a contrast to the months where he'd had no time to spare for his more frivolous longings. Plus another 15 pages of things we can use in labs. Seriously, though, there has to be something in this galaxy that you'd want. Not a lot, Shepard said. I'm pretty much covered already. You can owe me. That's not a comforting thought. It'll be no, don't worry about it right up until you demand my liver, Rodney grumbled, but only with half his attention. The other part was turning over Shepard's responses in his head. Something about Shepard's self-containment and the quickly covered restlessness in his voice when he'd spoken of surfing bothered him. It should be good that Shepard was apparently satisfied enough with his life not to want more than a few pieces of sporting equipment, except... Your liver? Shepard was saying. What is it with you and organ donation tonight? They brought by what turned out to be medical equipment late in the day. It's probably still in my mind, Rodney said, and then blurted out, not quite knowing why. Listen, you've been busy lately. Is everything going all right? Shepard looked puzzled by the question. What? Yeah, of course. No major crises or catastrophes in the last couple months. No, I know, but no smaller problems or anything? Everything's going fine? Rodney pressed. You'd hear about it at meetings if they weren't, Shepard pointed out. Which was true, except... Except now he was wondering when he'd last seen Shepard without that look of exhaustion around the eyes. And the way that Shepard had been in meetings lately, not quiet, not shy about giving his opinions or arguing his points, but somehow more subdued, suddenly struck him as wrong. They'd been busy, yes, and Shepard had still been behaving enough like his usual self, laid back and self-assured and always that little bit smarter than Rodney expected him to be, that Rodney hadn't even noticed a difference, except... He swallowed the words that welled up in his throat because, hey, where have you been, didn't make sense, really, and neither did, get back here. You're wandering off course again. Focus, Shepard told him, and Rodney corrected. Was he overreacting? Shepard still bantered back and forth with everyone, and he hadn't lost his cocky smirk. But no, those didn't mean anything. Those had always been the surface. When was the last time Rodney had seen genuine curiosity or enthusiasm peeking from behind that casual front? No, Rodney was sure of it. For whatever reason, Shepard was unhappy and had been for a long time. He didn't know what to do with that information. Or, no, he knew what to do. Fix Shepard, obviously. But he didn't know how, and he felt fumbling and a little resentful. He didn't even know what was causing the problem. Unrequited love? Conflicts with Caldwell that hadn't made it to the rumor mill? Chemical imbalance? Nutritional deficiency? Homesickness hitting hard now that they knew they could get home? It was a relief when Shepard said, "Hey, mountains, don't run into them." And he could set his thoughts aside and turn his attention to the puddle jumper. He threaded his way through the mountains several times, and then Shepard took a turn and took them through at hair-raising speeds that made Ronnie clutch tight at the arms of his chair and accuse Shepard of being a maniac and an adrenaline junkie. They were high up above the mountains again when Ronnie glanced at his watch and said, "Time to be getting back." Maybe on the way back he could manage subtlety, whatever people said, prod Shepard into letting him know what was wrong so he could solve it. "Yeah," Shepard said, but he didn't make a move to switch seats so Ronnie could fly them home. Just turned the jumper in that direction. "I've been thinking," he said, in the sort of casual tone that made Ronnie pay attention because it usually led either to trouble or something very interesting. "The puddle jumpers must have been sort of like cars to them, and if they used them on long trips, I'm surprised they didn't build in some sort of music-playing function." The display screen popped up in front of Ronnie, and he felt his mouth drop open. A menu of... Okay, why hadn't this occurred to him before? That if music stored in the main database had been wiped for space, the subsidiary puddle jumper systems might have been overlooked. Shepard was brilliant, and this is so obvious in retrospect, of course they'd have had... "Thought that might happen," Shepard said, his voice soft and smug. "Major," Rodney said, staring at the menu with its list of titles translated into English, and a block in ancient that might be the composer's name. "Major," Rodney said again, and then made an inarticulate noise and pointed at the screen, which just made Shepard laugh at him and look even more pleased with himself. "I'll fly us home, you check it out," Shepard said. "Yes, right, fine, I'll do that," Rodney said, breathlessly scanning the titles. "Harvest Song, Lament for Someone Whose Name Had Gone Untranslated, Symphony in Celebration of Our Great City." Ah, such pretentious bastards the ancients had been. "Wait," he said as a horrible thought struck him. "What if the menus are still in the system but the music itself is gone?" "Test it and see." "Yes, but..." Rodney held on to the heady mixture of anticipation and trepidation for another moment before he gave in and said, "Number 6, Symphony of the Stars." It wasn't better than the best music from Earth. Wasn't so staggeringly advanced that he fell to his knees in shock and awe at the ancient's superiority. For the first few minutes, he was even able to analyze it, to pick out the individual instruments and gauge their familiarity or alienness, comparing them to Earth equivalents. But the music was new to him, and rich, and layered, and imbued with a passion that he somehow hadn't expected. This was made after the wraith started to come, after they started dying, he thought, instinctively, because even in the joy, sorrow was woven through. And, though it was a foolish idea based on no evidence whatsoever, the kind of sentimentalism he hated, he was certain that whoever had written this had died in the fight, hadn't just vanished off into the ascended ether, and wow, he hadn't even realized how furious he was with them for abandoning their city, for giving up, for letting go. But whoever had written this had understood passion, understood grief, had loved someone or something thoroughly and fiercely and intensely. Somewhere along the line, he closed his eyes and stopped thinking. When a noise intruded into the music, it took him a moment to process it as Shepard's voice, and then to understand that Shepard was speculating about whether all the jumpers had the same selection or whether there was a variety. It took another moment to translate thought back to word. He summoned up Major and Later, flailing a hand blindly in Shepard's direction, and had never been so grateful that Shepard rarely needed to be told things twice. Sometime later, he was conscious of the familiar small noises as they docked in the puddle jumper bay, and then rustling noises from Shepard before a hand fell on his shoulder during a lull in the music, and Shepard's voice said softly, "We're home. Turn the lights off when you're done here, okay?" "Kay," he said, and the pressure on his shoulder went away, and he heard Shepard's footsteps walking off. When the music ended, he sat in silence for a bit, turning over bits and phrases of the music in his head, and feeling scoured out, cleansed, still, peaceful, before his brain started revving up again and he opened his eyes. He checked his watch. It was a half-hour flight back from the mountains, which meant he must have been sitting in the puddle jumper bay for close to another hour. He was tempted to begin another piece of music, but it was late, and besides, that last piece was still settling within him. It would wait till tomorrow. Tomorrow! It would be here tomorrow! Instead, he scrubbed at his face with his sleeve and got up to shut off the jumper systems. He expected the jumper bay to be still and dark, but two of the jumpers were open and he could see people inside. Shepard must have shared his discovery. He ventured closer to one and heard excited voices. The culture specialists were gathered around a console, deep in excited conversation that he backed away from. Music poured out from the other jumper, a vocal piece, a chorus of call and response in ancient. He saw several people gathered inside, a marine lying down on the floor, eyes closed and mouth half open, tapping his fingers against his chest soundlessly to mark the beat. Kavanaugh, back turned away from the door, and everyone else, hunched into himself. Miko, who looked up when he approached and sent him a luminous smile through the tears running down her face. He felt a smile grow on his own face, wide and involuntary, and he waved at her and took care to walk away quietly. Shepard wasn't in the control room or his quarters, so Rodney sent him an email instead. He intended to track down Shepard the next day to thank him in person and to tell him not to bother about the deal with Kavanaugh because there was only 4 months to wait, and they had the ancient music to tide them over. He also wanted to talk to him because it wasn't right, it wasn't fair that Rodney had gotten something he wanted, something that made him wander around the city humming in happiness, when Shepard was unhappy about something and being stupidly stoic about it. Suffering in silence was such an idiotic concept. But then Joyner's team, while exploring a medical wing with quarantine facilities, triggered a glitch in the system that locked them in. Rodney spent the next few days convincing the ancient systems that no, Joyner's hangnail didn't count as a communicable disease, interspersed with intervals for working out how to get food and water into the room, and culminating in a frantic scramble to stop the leak in power that developed as a result of one of Simpson's attempts at solving the problem. At the end of the week, after he'd spent another 2 days working out ways to override the quarantine system so that the situation wouldn't happen again, he was typing up his report between frequent yawns before he headed off to bed. He saved the document. He'd check it over again tomorrow when he was more awake, since he'd reached that stage where the simplest words were looking wrong, and checked his email one last time. He blinked blearily when he came across the department-wide email from Kavanaugh, saying that Kavanaugh had uploaded a number of MP3 files to the server. Ronnie sat up straight, fatigue forgotten, and navigated to the location Kavanaugh had given, where, yes, MP3 files, excellent! And, oh crap, he'd forgotten to tell Shepard not to bother about the lessons, hadn't he? Or had Kavanaugh been so enthralled by the grandeur of the ancient music that he'd seen the error of his ways and decided to share? Ronnie snorted. People could ramble on about the power of art and creativity and music all they wanted, but he thought not. He knew full well that you could have an appreciation for beautiful things and still be a complete bastard. Which meant that Shepard had gone ahead with the favor. Rodney's pleasure turned a little sour. Shepard had given him music twice over now, and Rodney hadn't done anything to balance those scales. Not that a few hours with Kavanaugh, much as Rodney complained about him, were a huge scourge in the grand scheme of things. And Rodney had never been ashamed of making demands of people, even if some people called it selfish. You didn't get what you wanted otherwise, and people were always free to refuse. Still, he felt somehow as if he'd taken advantage, been careless in asking for something from Shepard when he should have been making things better for him instead. It was done now, though, so he went through and downloaded the files he most wanted to his own laptop, in case Kavanaugh had a change of heart, and then listened to the Goldberg variations for a bit, leaning his head down to rest it on his folded arms and anticipating the well-known phrases. This was comfort music that he could relax into, and he could just about feel the back of his neck unknot as the irritation and tension from the last week slipped away, could feel his brain reorder itself into neater patterns. Then he shook off thoughts of sleep and went to find Shepard. Somewhat to his surprise, because he'd been prepared for a trek around the city, Shepard was in his own quarters, sitting across his bed and reading something on his laptop. "You busy?" Ronnie said, hovering at the door. "Nah, just glancing over mission reports," Shepard said. "What's up?" Maybe it was only Rodney's imagination that Shepard seemed to brace himself a little for the answer, for the latest round of what had gone wrong or what new task Rodney would ask him to perform. "Not a crisis for once," Rodney said. "I wanted to say thanks. Kavanaugh uploaded the music from his iPod onto the server. I meant to tell you that wasn't really necessary. I mean, now that we have the ancient music." Shepard rolled his eyes. "I sit through 3 hours of bad flying and worse attitude, and now you tell me?" Shepard had said it lightly, not accusingly, but Rodney still winced. "I am sorry," he offered, and Shepard looked a little taken aback at his sincerity, as if it had thrown off the rhythm of their usual back and forth. "I didn't mean... It turned out fine, and it's done now. Don't worry about it." "Still, I should have remembered to tell you." Shepard held up a hand to forestall future words. "Look, it was kind of an oversight that he hadn't had at least minimal training on it in the first place. We would have had to correct that at some point, and this way someone got something out of it." Glimmer of amusement. Plus, Kavanaugh got to malign my intelligence, common sense, and flying skills, and I got to threaten to put him on mainland rotation duty now that he knew how to get there, so everyone had fun. Oh God, Ronnie said, coming into the room and settling into a chair near Shepard's bed. He's such an ass. Shepard sent Rodney a dry look. It didn't leave any lasting scars on my psyche. I am capable of pushing back, you know. He lowered the lid on the laptop most of the way, leaning over to place it on the bedside table. Well, yes, Ronnie said, somewhat cheered. You are a pushy bastard when you need to be. That earned him another dry look. Thanks. Thanks lots. What? It's one of your better qualities. It is, Ronnie said. Well, it was. Ronnie valued stubbornness over fragile sensitivity any day. How'd the lessons go? Is he any good? Shepard tilted a hand from side to side. So-so. He's not going to crash if he has to fly one, but I'm not really going to be adding him to the rotation list for trips to the mainland. He leaned over again and pulled out the drawer on the bedside table, pulling out a crumpled bag of caramel corn, unrolling the fold at the top with a crackle and taking a handful himself before he slid the bag across the bed towards Rodney. A thought occurred to Rodney. He didn't learn faster than I did he? He asked, leaning forward to take some caramel corn. Uh-uh. If I say yes, you're going to sulk, and if I say no, you're going to gloat, and I'm not in the mood for either. Pass. Oh, fine, Ronnie said, a touch gloomily, crunching into the caramel corn. He knew what that likely meant, though it was kind of Shepard to spare his feelings. He chewed and swallowed and added, though honestly, it's difficult to work up a sulk when you have the Goldberg variations running through your head. I'm sure it is, but I think you might be up to the task, Shepard said. His tone was so very bland so that Rodney nearly laughed instead of managing the scornful look that deserved. Anyway, he said, graciously ignoring that comment, I am grateful. I know you've got a lot of demands on your time these days. He bit his lip. A lot of those demands were his. I've been thinking, he said, and tried not to scowl because he didn't want to give up something he enjoyed. Maybe it'd be better if we put off my flying lessons for a while. Shepard frowned. You getting too busy again? Do you bother reading my project status reports? Because if you did, you'd know I'm always going to be too busy, which makes that concern irrelevant. But if you are... Shepard shook his head. Hey, no, you know I don't mind. But I've pretty much got a handle on things, and you could probably use the extra time for things that... Rodney waved a hand. Shepard's voice had an edge of exasperation. Look, if you want, we can drop them, but it's not some sacrifice on my part. It gets me out of the city and away from paperwork, and it's not like I'm ever going to turn down time in the puddle jumper. Fighting with Taylor and lessons with you are, like, the easy parts of my day. Oh, okay, Ronnie said, relieved. He grinned at Shepard and took another handful of caramel corn. Never mind, then. They crunched caramel corn in companionable silence for a moment. The quiet felt comfortable in a way that Rodney didn't want to break, and it was nice to relax after the week he'd had. But this wasn't the only reason he'd come here, so he took a breath and launched into the matter. Though it doesn't say a lot for your day if the easy parts are getting hit with sticks and, well, teaching me. Shepard uncurled from his sitting position and stretched out on the bed, propping himself up on one elbow and smirking at Rodney. Sorry, am I maligning your reputation for being grouchy and difficult? I know you've spent a lot of time on that. Ha ha, funny. He threw a kernel of caramel corn at Shepard's head. Shepard caught it in midair and ate it. If there's been a lot of changes on the base, and if there's something that's a problem or that's wrong somehow... Shepard looked vaguely surprised, either at the subject matter or at Ronnie's uncharacteristic earnestness. Nothing's going wrong. God, his life had been easier when he'd been happily oblivious to other people's problems. At the very least, he'd spent less time wanting to smack Shepard about the head with a bag of caramel corn for being evasive. He was searching for words, and fine, all right, he couldn't do subtlety after all, which meant he'd have to go with bluntness, when Shepard broke the silence. He was tracing one hand over the pattern on the bedspread, eyes downcast so that Rodney couldn't read them. It's a different dynamic, is all, because all the people in the first round, I mean, your people, obviously, but even on the military side, it was people who'd signed up for exploration, and they went into it knowing it was a civilian-led mission, and the new people came to fight, and they were under military command, so... He shrugged one shoulder. Everyone'll adjust. It hasn't been that long. He glanced up at Rodney. Still strange to see new people around the corridors. For me, it's more the faces we don't see anymore, Rodney said. He hadn't said that with any particular intent, wrapped up as he was in his own thoughts about where to guide the conversation to get the information he wanted. He almost missed how Shepard stilled, looking stricken. And, oh, of course, that was obvious, before his face went guarded, and he agreed in a casual tone. Yeah, that too. It was simple then, not some great secret problem, but the one they all shared. Just sorrow, just loss, so pervasive that Rodney didn't usually consciously notice it any more than he did the floors he walked on. Rodney had gotten past the worst of it. He knew that he was still grieving, but the sadness had become an occasional sudden tide that welled up and left him unable to breathe before receding, instead of the heavy, muffling fog that hung over everything he did. It shouldn't have taken him this long to realize that Shepard was still caught in that gray place. It shouldn't have taken him this long, not when he'd been there when Elizabeth had told Shepard that Ford was one of the ones whose bodies hadn't been found, not when he'd seen Shepard's unguarded face then. Rodney didn't permit himself to think of Ford too often. He and Grodin were the losses that hurt the most, and thinking of them always brought the familiar misery back full strength. Rodney got a look at Shepard's closed-off expression and the way his hands had stilled in the bedspread before he had to tilt his head back and concentrate on the ceiling, blinking his eyes and breathing past the tightness in his throat. He looked down again when there was a rustling sound, Shepard sitting up. "That'll get better, too," Shepard said quietly, and his expression was all concerned team leader, full of reassurance and locked down underneath. "It will," Rodney agreed, and added, because he wasn't the one who needed reassurance, Major, it does." Shepard dropped his eyes. "Yeah." His hands were restless, tapping at his knees, flattening out the caramel corn bag. "You want any more of this?" he asked, and Rodney shook his head, watching as Shepard collapsed the air out of the bag and folded over the top again. He felt a little heartsore himself, because this wasn't fixable, and there wasn't any real solace to offer. Grief hurt, until the time when it didn't anymore. If they discovered the ancient music only a month ago, Rodney would have smiled on the surface and been distracted for a time, but it wouldn't have sunk in, wouldn't have delighted him the way it could now. Eventually, he had to hope, Shepard would settle the memories of Ford and Everett and all the other casualties in whatever place he kept his dead. Rodney cleared his throat. "When we expand the science team in 4 months, things should balance out again, provided they send competent people instead of idiots." Shepard looked faintly relieved at the return to a lighter subject. "I thought you said your chances of getting the people you wanted most were slim." Rodney sighed. "They are." Setting off on a giant adventure with no idea of what was in store was one thing. Setting off to another galaxy where there were known enemies intent on wiping you out before you finished your life's work was another, even if they could get back and forth now. "Though they may have less of a sense of preservation and more of a sense of adventure than I think they do," he said. "Plus, it's not like Earth doesn't get almost destroyed by the Goa'ulds on a regular basis, so they're not completely safe there either. We're still in more statistical danger, but then we've got better projects to work on, too." "Wow, you've almost got yourself a pithy recruiting slogan there," Shepard said. "Coolest work ever, possibly marginally less peril." Rodney interrupted himself with a wide yawn, tiredness creeping back in under his guard. "Possibly marginally less peril than you might think." He rubbed at his face with both hands. "Plus the chance to work around the clock under pressure," Shepard said wryly. "Can't beat that. You're crashing, McKay. Go get some sleep." "Right," Rodney said, bracing his hands on his knees. "Sleep would be a good thing. Ideally, the next crisis du jour won't happen for at least another 8 hours. "I think we might get at least 10 hours this time," Shepard said. "It's a good thing I'm too rational to believe in superstitions," Rodney said, standing up and heading to the door, turning back to lift a hand in a goodbye wave that Shepard returned, "because if I weren't, I'd have to smack you for jinxing us." Tired though his body was, Rodney knew that he wouldn't fall asleep immediately. It would take his brain a while to slow down enough to permit him to slip into sleep. He yawned and stretched a full body stretch and settled comfortably under the covers, ticking off the day's events and his plans for tomorrow in his head. Sometime during the week, when Rodney had been engrossed with quarantine protocols, someone had found time to transfer the ancient music from the Puddle Jumper systems back to the main city systems. Someone else had discovered that the music could now be accessed throughout the city, controlled as easily as lights and temperature by those with the ATA gene. Rodney reached one hand up and touched the flat control panel that was melded into the wall by his bed and wished for something andante and soothing, and then sprawled back on his pillows with his eyes closed as the mellow strains of a cello equivalent piped through the speakers in his room. He'd missed this, even more than he'd realized. Missed having music not only when he remembered to put a CD in when he was working, but as ambient noise, waking up in the morning to the radio, and having it on as background noise any time he was puttering around in his apartment or out in his car. Listening to certain kinds of music could still cause pain, bring back the bitter feeling of failure, but mostly he'd come to terms with it. Right now, he felt happy and comfortable in an uncomplicated way. He'd come to this galaxy in search of knowledge, at least ostensibly. He huffed out a breath of almost laughter, because his motivations for signing up had been such a tangled mix of intellectual curiosity and pride at being the one asked instead of Colonel Carter or Dr. Jackson. He'd firmly quelled the thought that the reason for that was because they were too valuable to risk and he wasn't. And, somewhere deep, fear that if he turned down the mission it would be proof of cowardice, proof that he was someone he couldn't respect. He hadn't suspected that this galaxy would somehow present him with all the components he needed for happiness. He had work he loved, for a boss he respected, at least a few colleagues whom he didn't want to throttle. In Zelenka, someone with whom he actually liked collaborating because of the frisson of excitement that came from having his ideas batted back to him in reshaped form, and the pleasurable edge their competitiveness gave the underlying respect between them. The satisfaction of fieldwork, of achieving competence outside his usual arena. The city itself full of light when he was used to underground complexes and bunkers. And music now, a final piece restored into place. Then there were the things he'd never thought of as necessary, because they hadn't been before. The camaraderie of teams, the surety of knowing that the people on your team had your back even if you had no common ground or grated on each other's nerves, and friendship, which he'd had before but usually in the casual and circumstantial way you have with people you know you'll only work with for the duration of a project or see every few years at professional conferences. He hadn't expected what he'd found here. He'd never expected just to sit with Carson nursing the last glasses of scotch through a long night after Perna's death. He hadn't expected the way that Zelenka, in response to Rodney's small fit of hysterical sobbing when he'd heard that Shepard was alive right as he was coming down off the stimulants, would reach out with hands that were shaking with adrenaline to grip his shoulders and pat his hair and murmur things in Czech, grounding him. He hadn't expected Shepard at all, Shepard with his twisty intelligence that he didn't bother to downplay around Rodney anymore, and the way Shepard felt real and comprehensible and easy to be around in a way that most people weren't. He was still mildly worried about Shepard. Should he be? Violent loss wasn't uncharted territory for Shepard, Rodney knew that much, and he had to trust that Shepard knew how to navigate his way through it. Rodney supposed he could keep an eye on Shepard and make sure he didn't retreat too far into duty, that he kept doing the things he usually enjoyed until they felt right again, like, sparring with Taylor and flying in the puddle jumper, and now that Rodney thought of it, Shepard was usually the one to suggest those sessions. That seemed like a sign of resilience. Rodney turned over under the covers, curling his arms around his pillow. Shepard had always been the one to propose those team nights of watching movies or teaching Taylor card games, too, enjoyable even though they were completely unsubtle, though efficacious, Rodney had to admit, attempts at fostering camaraderie. Well, of course it had been Shepard to arrange those. It probably would have broken some unspoken military protocol for Ford to arrange it when he wasn't the team leader, and Taylor was still a bit set apart by her alienness, and Rodney was hardly the type to spend valuable research time planning social events. He huffed out a breath, turning over on his side and pulling the covers up further around his shoulders, rubbing at an itch on his calf with his other foot. The three of them hadn't gotten together like that since Ford's disappearance. Perhaps Shepard hadn't thought of it, or felt it would highlight Ford's absence too clearly. And God, Rodney wanted to get back to regular field work, truly, but he didn't even want to think about the time when they'd have to sit down and pick out a permanent fourth. He missed those nights, Rodney realized. Missed seeing Taylor when they weren't working or on a mission. Missed Shepard's low-voiced commentary in the movie's events and how they related to actual Earth customs. It wouldn't be the same without Ford, but, Zelenka had questioned some reference to the Prince's Bride that Carson had made a couple of weeks ago when they were all eating breakfast, which meant he hadn't seen it. Rodney could round up Roddick, Carson, Shepard, and Taylor under the cover of increasing Zelenka's cultural knowledge, and perhaps Ford's absence wouldn't be quite so apparent. He wasn't the sort to instigate events, and Shepard was undoubtedly going to shoot some of the scoffing comments Rodney had made about Shepard having an alternate career as a social planner on a cruise line right back in his direction. But there had always been things Rodney would make an effort for. Now, apparently, there were people as well. The music was lulling him to sleep, and Rodney half wanted to let it take him under, half wanted to stay awake to continue listening. He didn't know how much his thoughts were blurring until a sudden twitch in one of his legs jerked him half awake again, and he realized that he'd been having scattered thoughts about an improvement to the existing quarantine protocols that didn't hold up under awareness. He shifted positions again, to his back. Staff meeting tomorrow wasn't until mid-morning, and there weren't any pressing matters to take care of before then. He could be lazy and sleep in if he wanted, though whenever he planned to do so, he almost always woke up early, full of energy and unable to wallow in bed. Wallowing sounded nice. A good plan. The music was drawing to a close, and he thought that he should press his hand to the panel again to trigger a new piece. But his body was comfortable, and... And also, he slept.